Last week's parsha was parsha by Yigash. This week's parsha is parsha by Yechi. Every year you got a darshan about this. It's a parsha stuma. What that means is that if you're laning, you'll never be able to find the beginning of the parsha. You look around, you're looking for it, you're trying to find Vayechi, it's not there. It's in the middle of nowhere, in the middle of a paragraph. Three psukim later, five psukim later is a pay. That's why not start it with Vayachre Advarim Ha'ilav Vayomer LeYosef? Call the parsha Yosef. Call Vayomer. Call Vayehi. Why does it have to be by Yehi?
Two of them might be
Yaakov. So what's going on?
It won't be good because only six parshas are named after somebody.
What's Pshat over here? It's called the Parsha Stuma. Why? So I'm going to give you guys two reasons. One is going to be from the Chassam Sofer, one from Rav Wolfson. Rav Wolfson is awesome and needs five Hakdamas. Count them up, five Hakdamas. But the Chassam Sofer did not need such an Hakdama, so we'll go in. Rashi says an unbelievable thing. Lama Parsha Zuz Stuma. Why is this Parsha all closed up? Why is it all closed up and non-explanatory? The Vishak Kavan Shinifter Yaakov Avinu, when Yaakov Avinu died, Nistimue Neim Velibam Shal Yisrael Mitzor Seshibud. The eyes and hearts of Bnei Yisrael closed up from the pain of the servitude. She's Chilu L'Shabdom. That they started to be Meshabit them. They started to put them under and they started to make them work hard for everything they were doing. Their hearts and their eyes closed up. They couldn't take it anymore. They said, how can we do this? We can't deal with this. That's what happens. I don't get it. Okay, what does that mean? They started working when Yaakov died? Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda, Yisachar, Zvulun, etc. They worked? They were part of Shibud Mitzrayim? They served? They were slaves in Mitzrayim? Since when? Where do you get that from? Where does that come from? That's the kasha you got to ask in this question. On this Rashi. How could Rashi say such a thing? As soon as Yaakov died, the Shibud started. The servitude started. It's not true. Lamaisa, it's not true. It never happened. We know this about Machlokas when exactly it started. Did it start when the Shvatim died? And there was 116 years of Shibud, or 117 years of Shibud. Did it start when Miriam was born? And Miriam was born 86 years before the Gula. There were 86 years of Shibud. Was there 86 or 117? That's what they argue about. When the Shvatim died. But when Yaakov died, nobody says that. Nobody says when Yaakov died. What does that have to do with anything? What does that mean? What does that mean that that started the servitude of the Jews? Shibud means the servitude. Two ways of understanding how to be a Jew. Two ways to be a Jew. Two ways to be a Jew, says the Chassam Sofer. Number one is an eved. Do it as a slave. Listen, I got to do it, of course. You know, God put that Har Sinai on top of my back. I said, you got to do it. You got to deal with it. You know what? Just do it because you're a slave. Yeah, over our heads, over our backs. I said, you got to do it. If you don't do it, I'm going to throw this rock down at you. You're all going to die. Right, I'm going to kill you. That's one as an Evan. You're forced. You got to do it. Man, I got to get up this morning because I got to put on tefillin. Got to put on tefillin. I wake up this morning, I got to go to davening. If I don't go to davening, I'm just not going to feel good. I'm not going to do this. I'm just so upset about it, but I'll do it anyway. Do it because I have to. Man, I got to go learn. Man, it's like, if I don't do it, I'm just going to get yelled at by Tzvi, and he's just going to kill me. I just got to go learn. You just have that little object. That little object that's just like, all right, I guess I got to do it just because, whatever, you know, I'm a slave. There's another way. To be a Ben Chorin. To be a Ben Chorin. To do it because you choose to do it. To do it because I want to do it. Not because anyone's making me do it. Not because anyone's forcing me and saying, all right, now it's your turn, Svi. You got to go. But because I choose and I say, you know what? You know what I want to do tonight? I want to go learn. I want to wake up and I want to go daven. I want to go daven. And when you go there, you do it with like an open heart. And he said, like, wow, I really want to daven this morning. Not just because you have to, but because you want to. You know that? The difference between having to and wanting to? Mm-hmm. And wanting to? A definite difference, right? The Chiddush of learning, and I tell this to every single person that says, I can't learn Gemara. I can't do it. I can't sit there and I can't figure out. I can't concentrate. I can't do this. I don't know. Whatever. I just can't deal with it. I tell them every single time, the point of learning is that the beginning is always hard as anything. It's the hardest thing you've ever done before in your life. But the point of it is to become best friends with the Baye and Rava. To the point where you know their statements so well, like you're quoting sports lines, and you're quoting Simpsons lines, and you're quoting Family Guy lines, the Tuma of the Tuma, the biggest of Tumas. You quote all those lines, and you say them as well as you can do them. That's how well you quote the Gemara. You quote a line from a Baye, you quote a line from Rava. When you're sitting at a bus stop, you're talking to yourself. But you're like, oh, Baye, you're a jokester. You're talking to yourself with a Baye. Talking to yourself about a Baye, when you're sitting by yourself, you're thinking about how could that be a machlokas? You think about stuff like that. Instead of thinking about the garbage that's out there in the world, you start thinking about that stuff. That's the difference between a guy who's forced to do it, that as soon as he leaves, in one ear, out the other. He's out, he's like, what do I just do? Just completely forgets. Doesn't think about it whatsoever. And a guy who leaves and goes over everything he just learned. Goes over every single little thing that he learned. Not always will you find a guy like that, but a guy who's really doing it out of Ava, because he wants to, not because he's forced, a guy who wants to do it, that guy, you'll see a very big difference when he leaves that base medrash. When he walks away, what does he look like when he walks away? What's he thinking about? What does he have inside his head? That's the difference between those two people. Listen, certain people you see and you just want to learn from. There's certain people out there that you look at and you're like, you know what? I want that guy's a Rebbe. Some guys out there. I remember going to Rav Asher Shir the first time I went there. Rav Asher Arieli in the mirror. Rav Asher was just the coolest man of all time. Walks inside, 400 people standing around. He like quickly like goes in and like immediately starts Shir. And he's so quiet and so unassuming, so not, you know, like so quiet, so nothing. And yet he has a Shir in front of 400 people, put on the radio. It's all over the place. Rav Asher, it's Rav Asher, you know? It's famous people. It's just it's completely different, right? There's just certain people that you really want to learn from, that you want to take as your Rebbe. Because you see within them that there's something to them that nobody else has. That you look at them and you're like, wow, that guy's great. Wow, that guy's someone that I want to get from. Wow, that guy's someone that I want to emulate, or that I want to keep. You all have that Rebbe. You all have that Rebbe, like Rabbi Cohn for me, or like Rabbi Lairfield for me, or certain other people by me. Where I look at certain people and I say, wow, I wish I could be like that person. Well, I wish I could do what that person's doing. Yaakov Avinu was that type of a person, where people looked at him and they couldn't help but want to learn more. They couldn't help but say to themselves, wow, this is what life's all about. Life is all about being like that guy. To copy, to emulate that guy. That's what it was all about. And when they saw Yaakov Avinu, they didn't want to do it just out of office. They weren't forced to do it. They saw Yaakov. They didn't need a phone call of Yaakov Avinu to say to them, hey guys, are you coming in to Seder today? Yaakov Avinu was there. So they said, we got to go because Yaakov's there. They had a great time. They had a fun time because they looked at Yaakov Avinu and they saw, this is the Emes. This is real Torah. And we all know that what was Yaakov's Mida? Emes and Torah. It's a Torah. It's not just stump. It's that these were what he stood for. This is what he's all about. He's all about Emes and Torah. He's all about, you look at Yaakov, you saw everything. As opposed to the Shvatim, you looked at the Shvatim, it wasn't as great. Sure, the Shvatim were awesome. Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda, you looked at these guys and they were awesome. And for us, if we would have looked at them, we would have been moved to the point where we would have been like, forget it, I'm not even wearing this keep anymore. I'm going to wear just a huge one of those Arab bandanas, you know, that go all around my head, a kaftan or whatever it is. You know, I'm just going to learn all day long. Because if you would see somebody like that, it would just impress you like anything. But it wasn't like that to Bnei Yisrael and Mitzrayim. They saw Yaakov and they saw, this is life. They saw the Shvatim and they're like, it's okay. Shibud does not have to be servitude as in working hard or working slavery under Mitzrayim. You know why there's a stuma? Because when Yaakov died, they forgot what it was like to learn out of Ava. They forgot what it was like to learn because they wanted to learn. They learned because they had to learn. Because Reuven was calling them up on the phone and saying, guys, why aren't you in Seder? Because Shimon was waking them up in the dorms and saying, come on guys, you're missing Shacharis. Because Levi was going around and saying, guys, come on, let's go learn. It's not the same as Yaakov Avinu, where they were like, we want to go here, Yaakov Avinu. It's not the same as it was by Yaakov Avinu. So that started the Shibud of Mitzrayim. Mitzrayim is not only about the land of Egypt. It's also the land of Tsar, of pain, a little bit of problems. Mitzarim, of being pain of Mitzarim, of being like, all right, whatever. That's what it was all about. That's what Rashi means by this started, when Yaakov died, started the servitude of Mitzrayim. It wasn't literally servitude. They weren't slaves yet. They didn't become slaves for years from now. Not for another 80 years, 75 years. That took a while for it to happen. But you know what happened right then? They forgot what it meant to really learn. They forgot what it meant to really live your life for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's what happened, and that's why it's a Parsha Stuma. There's no difference between Parsha Vayechi and Parsha Vayigash, just in the middle of nowhere. It's number one. Number two is Rav Olson. Rav Olson says it so differently, but you need five Hakdamas to get this. Hakdama number one. Every letter in the Torah, now think about it, it makes, why are there no Nekudos in the Torah? No Nekudos in the Torah. There's no Mapach Pashtas, you know, any of that either. There's no little laning things either. Why aren't there? But different ways of reading it, that's definitely true. But aside from that, it's because it's not necessary. Because in theory, when you should read the Torah, it technically could just be read all together as one. So why not put the letters together and make it all just one big word? Why does it have to be separate letters? The same way we can read the Torah and we assume what the trup is, and we assume what the nekudos are and everything like that, we assume all those things, why don't we just assume where the words end? We don't have the psukim, so why not just assume where the words end? So Rav Wolfson says an unbelievable thing. He says, you know why? Because the space in between the letters, and the space above the letters and under the letters and everything, every letter can and must be separate from another letter, or else it's a puzzle sefer Torah. You have two letters that are connected to one another, an aleph and a beis, that are connected to one another, puzzle sefer Torah. Why? Because the open area stands for Torah Shebaal Peh. The letters are Torah Shebichsav. The gevil, the open letters, are Torah Shebaal Peh. That's why every parsha also needs a little space in between one parsha and the other. Why do you need that open space? To darshan out the differences between this parsha and the other parsha. To go on, oh, here's Vayigash and here's Vayechi. So you need an open space in between the two to darshan out the Torah Shebaal Peh that's in between every single parsha. Number one, what? Oh, but they don't. There's none. So what's the pshat? What's the point behind that? Number one. Number two, our second thing over here. Oh, what does that mean? If Vayechi Yaakov is put in a place where there's an open space, that must be a remez that you got to write down Torah Shebaal Peh. You got to write down Torah Shebaal Peh, that in the place where it should be Torah Shebaal Peh, you got to start writing something down. What do you got to write down there? And what are we getting out of that? That's number one. That's Akdama number one. Akdama number two, Vayechi Yaakov. Vayechi Yaakov. But when it says Yaakov's going to die, Vayikrvu Yimei Yisrael Lamus. Which is the better name, Yaakov or Yisrael?
Yisrael.
Yisrael is the better name. Shouldn't it be Vayikrvu Yisrael? Vayechi Yisrael? I'm sorry? Vayechi Yisrael. Yisrael lived. Vayikrvu Yimei Yaakov. Lamus, that he started out. Yaakov is the lower level. Shouldn't it be the opposite way? Shouldn't it be the opposite way? It should be the exact opposite. Yisrael should be the higher level of life, and Yaakov should be the death. So why is it switched around? So Chassam Sofer answers it in an unbelievable way. Chassam Sofer answers, the life of a tzaddik is usually greater than his death. Why is the life of a tzaddik greater than in his death? What's the difference? Not only the effect, but what does he do during life that he can't do in death?
Torah,
mitzvos. He can't do any Torah mitzvos after death, so he'd rather have it. But Yaakov said, I'd rather die in Eretz Yisrael, be dead in Eretz Yisrael, than be alive in Mitzrayim. I'd rather be dead in Eretz Yisrael than alive in Mitzrayim. What in the world does that mean? You still can't do any mitzvos. Yeah, you're dead.
But the thing is, there's a thing that says that you get sent right up to Shemayim when you're there.
That's not what he wants. Don't give me that. Don't tell me that he's going for schar and he's saying something like that. No. He's going. Why? What in the world does that mean? He wants to do mitzvos, right? So why would he want to die and be in Eretz Yisrael if he can't gain anything out of that anyway? He's not gaining anything anyway. So that's number two. Number three, there's a Gemara in Ksuvas and Daf Kuf Gimel Amud Aleph. You guys have heard this Gemara before. Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi died. Every Erev Shabbos, Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi went home. Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi went home. Yeah, if anybody's doing Daf Yomi knows this Gemara. Wow. He used to go home and make Kiddush for his family. He used to make Kiddush to be Motzi his family. One day, somebody knocked on the door during Kiddush time, and the Amasa de Bei Rebbe, the maidservant in Rebbe's house, said, "Shh, Rebbe's making Kiddush right now." And the guy's like, what? Rebbe died a year ago. What do you mean he's making Kiddush right now? Rebbe heard, realized that people were talking about it. He said, I'm not coming back ever again. Not coming back ever again. So even though he was dead, he was still coming by and making Kiddush. Says Rebbe Kiva Eger, classic Rebbe Kiva Eger question. You can't be motzi somebody with Kiddush, you're dead. You can't be motzi everyone with Kiddush. He had no chiyuv. If he had no chiyuv, how is he motzi everybody else? Says the Chassam, of Sefer HaChassidim, no. Rebbe was on a level that even though he was dead, he still was a bit chayv in mitzvos. He was chayv in mitzvos like a woman. And since he was chayv in mitzvos like a woman, therefore he was able to be motzi everybody else
that
in his house.
Sense.
Oh, that, very good!
No.
Very good! That was my question.
No.
That's Akdama number three.
That's the reason why this makes sense.
Akdama number three. Akdama number three.
She can make it just as well as he can.
Akdama number three. No, that's a stupid question. There's a good question on this, but that was a stupid one. So number three. Number four. The Medrash says, an unbelievable Medrash, Vayechi Yaakov Be'eretz Mitzrayim Shvas Rishona. Yaakov lived in Eretz Mitzrayim for 17 years. Rebbe read the pasuk and he said, "V'chaya Yehuda b'tzipori l'shvas reishonin." Yehuda lived in Tzipori for 17 years. Good comparison. What in the world is Rebbe comparing himself to Yaakov Avinu for? Why is he saying, like, he lived in Tzipor for 17 years, Yaakov lived in Eretz Yisrael, he lived in Tzipor for 17, in Mitzrayim, I'm sorry, he lived in Tzipori for 17 years. What does he want out of that, and why was he saying it out loud? And why do we have to quote that down as a medrash? And why do we have to quote that down as a medrash? So here we go. Those are the four akdamas. Our fifth akdama is like this, and this is a quick one. Pshat is Rebbe Yehuda Nasi is a nitzutz. He has a nitzutz. He has a spark of the soul of Yaakov Avinu. Nasi, Rebbe Yehuda HaNasi, Nasi is Neshama Shel Yaakov Avinu. Neshama Shel Yaakov Avinu. He had the Neshama of Yaakov Avinu. Rebbe Yehuda Nasi is well known as being Yaakov Avinu. That's why he started off brachos with Shema. Because Kriya Shema is what Yaakov Avinu said to all the Shvatim. He made up Kriya Shema with Baruch Shem Kavod Melech Solom Vaed. That was Yaakov Avinu's tefillah. And he starts off Me'im Asai, Korim Kriya Shema Be Arvis, because that was his tefillah. This whole big thing why Rebbe Yehuda HaNasi was really Yaakov Avinu. The Ben Ish-Chai speaks about it quite a bit in the beginning of brachos. There's a very big little thing over here. So either way, Rebbe Yehuda HaNasi was Yaakov Avinu. Now he saw that Vayechi Yaakov was written in a space that should have been wide open. It should have been Torah Sheba'al Peh. But instead, what's written inside there? It says Vayechi Yaakov, which means what? Must mean that in a place where you should have Torah Sheba'al Peh, it should just be said out loud and nothing's written down. There might be times where you got to start writing things down. When is that time? Says Rashi, when there's Tzoras HaShibud. If you're in the middle of a galus and things are getting really bad and people are starting to forget the Torah, put Vayechi Yaakov in that space. You got to start writing down Torah Sheba'al Peh. Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi looked at that and said, I am Yaakov Avinu. It must be telling me that it's time for me, Yehuda, who I have lived in Tzipori for 17 years, like Yaakov lived in Mitzrayim for 17 years, to start writing down the Torah Sheba'al Peh. That I have to write down the Mishnayos the same way that Yaakov is put in a place where it should be Torah Sheba'al Peh. That's what's teaching me to go ahead and write down the Mishnayos. So Yehuda compared himself to Yaakov Avinu to be able to write down the Torah Sheba'al Peh. If by Rebbe Yehuda HaNasi, who was Yaakov Avinu, if by him we have a Gemara in Ksubis that says that he came back. He came back in order to make Kiddush for his children and be Motzi his kids. And Rebbe Akiva Eger quotes a Sefer Hasidim that says that means what? That he's still Chayiv and Mitzvahs a little bit. Says Yaakov Avinu, I'd rather be dead in Eretz Yisrael than be alive in Mitzrayim. But why? If you're dead, you're not Chayiv and Mitzvahs. Not true. By Yaakov Avinu, it's Yaakov Avinu lo meis. Yaakov Avinu was on the level where he was still Chayiv and Mitzvahs even when he was dead. So he was still doing mitzvos, and he was still making kiddush for his kids, even when he was dead. So according to the Chassam Sofer, you know what the pshat is? What was the name? Vayechi Yaakov, a lower level of Vayechi, because he's in Mitzrayim. That wasn't such a life. But Vayikru Yimei Yisrael Lamus, when he died, he'll be Yisrael. When he dies, he'll be in Eretz Yisrael. That's greater. Why? Because in Eretz Yisrael, at least he'll still be doing mitzvos in Eretz Yisrael. Says Rav Wolfson, ends off with an unbelievable thing. Yaakov does make kiddush for us every Shabbos. You know when? Shalosh Shudis. There's no Berei Pri HaGafen during Shalosh Shudis. Shalosh Shudis is whose meal? It's Yaakov Avinu's meal. The third meal is Yaakov Avinu's meal. During that meal, we don't make Kiddush. Why? Yaakov Avinu is Motzi us. Every single time, he makes Kiddush for us. We might not hear it. We might not realize it, but it's all from him. He's making the Kiddush, and he's being Motzi us every single time. And that's what Yaakov Avinu is doing. That is an awesome Teres. Yeah, it's Chassidus to the extreme. I'm going to talk about, there's Litvak, and then there's Norm Chassidus. This is like, that's like Chassidus to the extreme. By the way, that's the idea behind it. That's an absolute, that was an awesome board. Okay, so Yaakov Avinu comes along. I mean, this is like a pshat board, but it's a strange pasuk. Yaakov Avinu gets sick. Yosef comes along and goes to visit him. Yaakov Avinu sort of gives him like a little speech over here. I want you to go bury me. Bury me in Maris Machpelah. And he says the following, Pasuk Zayin, Perek Memchas, Pasuk Zayin, Vani bevoi mi Padon, when I was coming from Padon Aram, when I'm coming from Lavan, Mesa alai Rachel be'eretz Kanan baderech. Rachel died on me in the middle of Eretz Kanan on the road. Bod kivas aretz levo afrasa. On my way to Afras. The Ekparasham be'derech Afras he based Lacham. And I buried her right there in the middle of the road. Clearly, the Pasuk says be'eretz Kanan. Says Eretz Kanan. She died in Eretz Kanan. Look at Rashi. Rashi says a line over here. When I was coming, Bevo Yumi Padon. Two times he says it. He says, Apo Pishani Matriach Alechel Olechinin Li Kover Eretz Kanan. Even though I'm bothering you to make me be buried in Eretz Kanan, Velo Kach Asisi Leimcha. I didn't do that to your mother. I didn't bury her in Eretz Kanan. But you did. Rachel's buried in Eretz Kanan. Well, we have Kevarachos, still Eretz Canaan. That's number one. The second thing is, it says later on, it says, but Berel Hashem, he says, Lo Halachtia Afilu LeBeis Lechem, I didn't even bring her to Beis Lechem, Lachnisa LaAretz, to bring her to Eretz Yisrael. I didn't even bring her to Eretz Yisrael. But you did. The Pasuk says she died in Eretz Canaan. I don't understand. What is Rashi talking about? The Ramban asks on this. The Ramban asks on these Rashis, and he says Pashid. He says Rashi's wrong. Never, it's not true. It's Pashid, not true. The Mizrahi is so dochik. The Mizrahi looks at this and to answer up Rashi, he says, you know what Echnisa La'aretz means? It means he never brought her La'aretz no shaves, to a settled place. Doesn't mean Eretz Yisrael. It means to a settled place, a place that was settled. Technically, Rashi doesn't say, I didn't bring you to Eretz Canaan. He said, I didn't bring you to a settled place. I didn't bring you to an Eretz no shavas. That's what he means over there. But it's still dochek. What's the real answer for Rashi? What's Rashi talking about over here? Another Chassam Sofer. Chassam Sofer says, the pshat is that Eretz Yisrael is muchzak l'avos. We know that, right? It was guaranteed to be given to Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. But it wasn't theirs yet. The only parts of Eretz Canaan that were considered the avos, that belonged to the avos, were places that they bought. What places did they buy?
Maris
Machpelah. And? Only one other place. Anybody know? What?
Shechem.
Those are the only two places that they bought. Maris Machpelah and Shechem. So Yaakov, you know, in order to bury Rachel in what would be considered Eretz Yisrael, would have to bring her either to Shechem or Maris Machpelah. And both those places were too far away. So he said, Yosef, I couldn't bring her over to those places in Eretz Yisrael because I had to bury her that day. And I wasn't going to be able to go all the way to Maris Machpelah. I wasn't going to be able to go all the way to Shechem. You're right. It isn't that far. It is true. But he did have a lot of stuff with him. And he wasn't going to ditch everybody and go bury Rachel by himself in the middle of Maris Machpelah. So he said to Yosef, I can't do it. I wasn't able to do it. So instead, I buried her right here. So he'll ask me, so why didn't I buy the place? Why didn't I buy this place and make it Eretz Yisrael? It was a land of Hefker. I couldn't buy it from anyone. I wasn't able to buy from anyone. I was able to make a chazakah, but I wasn't able to buy from anyone. It was a land of Hefker. And if you ask me, so why did I bury her in a place of Hefker? That Rashi goes on and says, because I knew that when they were going to be in Galus and they were going to be taken out by Nebuchadnezzar and Nebuzaradan, they were going to pass by this place. And Rachel was needed to be Rachel Mevaka al-Baneha, for her to cry in her children as they were going out. So I had to bury her in this place. If I would have brought her to Maris Machpelah, that would have been one thing. But I couldn't bring her to Maris Machpelah. So I wanted to bury her in Beis Lechem and buy parts of Beis Lechem to make it Eretz Yisrael. That's what I wanted to do. But I couldn't because I had a nevuah that I had to bury her right here in the land of Hefker and I couldn't buy the place. So I'm sorry, but it's not my fault. It's not my fault. That's what he was trying to say, and that's Pshat Beyan Rashi. It's a very good Pshat in Rashi. What's with the first three Shvatim? That Yaakovinu doesn't bless them. He curses them. Reuven, Shimon and Levi, Arur Apam, cursed is their anger. He doesn't curse them to the point where Yehuda was walking backwards, says the Midrashim. And Yaakovinu had to call, Yehuda, come back here. I'm going to bless. I mean, think about it. This is like, it sounds like an old man just taking it all out on his kids. Reuven, Shimon, and Levi, Reuven did one thing wrong his entire life. Now I realize that's a bad thing. He moved around the beds. But one thing wrong his entire life. He lived a long life. Shimon and Levi, they killed Shechem for their sister. And Yaakov's like, oh, you guys are Rishayim Gemurim. Rishayim Gemurim, what did they do wrong? They did what they thought was right. What happened over here? Why did he curse Reuven, Shimon, and Levi? So, I saw Yaakov Reuveni. I got this in the middle. Rav Heinemann from near Yisrael, from Baltimore. I'm sorry, the Rav of Baltimore was speaking today. And he was speaking, and he was talking to the Choshen Mishpachol. I wasn't really paying attention, but I was there because I just wanted to hear what he was trying to say. So I was doing the Chumash here in the middle of this. I found this while I was writing it up, and I yelled out loud, I'm like, whoa! Like, everybody turns around, they're just like, what? I was like, oh, man, sorry. Did like one of those, you know, like, I'm really sorry, I didn't mean to do this. One of these things that just comes out there. We know there were three things that Cain did to Hevel. Cain did three things to Hevel. What were the three things he did? Number one, he killed him. That was a pretty bad one. It was pretty bad. He also was jealous of him. And anyone know the third thing? Stole his second wife. Cain was born with one twin sister and he married that one. Hevel was born with two twin sisters. And Cain claimed, I'm the Bechor, I get the double status, give me your second wife. Hevel claimed, no. They were both born with me. I'm supposed to marry both of them. That's what Hevel claimed. Cain said, not like that. Machlokas between Cain and Hevel. level over that second sister. We're not going to worry about the killing. We're not going to worry about the jealousy. That's later on. Reuven, though, was the neshama of Cain. Reuven was born with the neshama of Cain. That's Reuven Bechoriato. Leah, when Reuven was first born, says Ben Harishon. Says the Yalkut Reuveni, that means he was the first son to have ever been born. Who's the first son to have ever been born? Cain. Ben Arishon, Bechoriato, you're my Bechor. Says Yaakovinu, you're Cain. You are Cain. Your neshama is the neshama of Cain. What did you have to fix up? Your tikkun that you were supposed to do was HaKadosh Baruch Hu told you, imtativ, if you do well, se'es, you'll be lifted up by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Everything will be all good. Says Yalkut Reuveni, what that referred to is that you have to improve yourself by not taking the wife of Hevel, by not taking away the wife of Hevel, by leaving the wife of Hevel by Hevel, and by not taking her away. So you have to leave that. That was your tikkun. By you not taking the wife of Hevel, everything would have been okay. Everything would have been fine. So Yaakovinu said, did you do that? Did you do that? Kochi, he says, you're my koach, voracious oni, and you were the beginning of my travails. Yaakovinu is Hevel. He was the nitzutz of Hevel, the neshama of Hevel. If he's the neshama of Hevel, that means that the one job that Reuven had to do in his life was not to take the wife of Hevel. Don't take the wife of Hevel. And think about it, it's his father. Why would he take the wife of his father in the first place? He would never do it. He would never do it. Why would he ever do such a thing? He would never do anything that even seems like it. It was such an easy tikkun, such an easy way of fixing up the chait of Cain. It would be such an easy thing to do, because Cain and Hevel are right here. Who was that second wife?
Bilhah.
Switch around the letters of Bilhah. It's Hevel. It's Hevel with an extra hay for the extra woman, because she needed extra hay for Rachel, whatever. But it's Hevel. That wife was the wife of Hevel. I looked it up, by the way. Hevel's first wife has a name. It's Balbira. Hevel's second wife does not have a name. I don't know exactly what that wife's name is. I will put money down. I'll put money down that her second wife's name was Bilhah. Was Bilhah. And this whole maisa with Bilhah and Yaakov Avinu, where Reuven slept, Vayishkav Reuven as Bilhah Pilegeshavit, doesn't literally mean he slept with her, but he moved around the beds. That whole maisa was the whole tikkun. If he wouldn't have done that, he would have fixed up the chait of Cain and everything would have been okay. But he didn't do it. So instead, the neshama of Cain left him and went over to somebody else, to Yisro. And Yisro fixed it up. Because who else is the neshama of Hevel? The neshama of Hevel went from Yaakov Yinu to Moshe. And Yisro did what? He gave over his daughter, Tzipora, who was a Gilgal of that second wife again, over to Moshe Rabbeinu. And by doing that, he was able to be metakin. So who was able to be metakin the Se'es? Yisro was able to do it. Look at the pasuk. It says, Reuven, Bechoriata, Kochi Voracious Oni. Yes, sir, Se'es. Yisro will fix up the Se'es. He'll be able to do it. Yes, sir, Oz. And Yisro will have the strength to be able to do it. But you didn't do it. You messed it up. That's what he was telling over to Reuven. You had a chance to be metakin the chait of Cain. You had a chance to be metakin everything. And he didn't do it. There's more to this. We're not going to do it now. It has to do with the Dudayim. It has to do with the Dudayim. There's a lot to it. Dudayim also has the word Adam inside there. Obviously, there's something inside there. Unbelievable Divrei Torah that come from that board. But that's number one with Reuven. What about Shimon and Levi? There's a lot of different answers to Shimon and Levi. The words Arur Apam. Arur Apam. How do you understand that? Cursed is their anger. So the simple answer is that the Panach Raza says he cursed their anger. He didn't curse them. He said, your anger is terrible. Don't let your anger come out. The Chizkuni says straight out, don't let your anger be matzliach. Whatever you do in anger, I don't want it to be matzliach. I don't want your anger to rule over you. He's blessing them that your anger should never be matzliach. You shouldn't become angry. That's number two. The Ben Ish Chai says, you should make sure that your anger never overpowers you to make you do something you don't really want to do. That's number three. And then the Chassam Sofer. He's explaining what happened to them. Birtzonam, the pasuk says, I'm sorry, kiva'apam horgu ish. In their anger, they killed a man. Ubirtzonam equals shore. Willingly, they uprooted a shore. Says the Chassam Sofer. Shore stands for shchen de chamor. Shore is shin for shchem. Ve chamor is shin vav resh. Shchem ve chamor. The resh at the very, very end. You know what the pshat is behind that? When Shimon and Levi came into the town of Shechem, you know what they wanted to do? They didn't want to kill off the whole city. All they wanted to do was kill Shechem and Hamor. That's all they were there to do. Their tzonam, they're willing. What they wanted to do was ikru shor. They wanted to uproot Shechem the Hamor from the city. They wanted to destroy Shechem and Hamor. The problem was, the rest of the city started fighting them. So Be'afon, they got all angry. Guys, stop fighting us. We're allowed to kill these people. Out of their anger, horgu ish. Horgu ish. They killed an ish. What's ish stand for? Anshe Shechem. Aleph is the Anshe. Yud is the last part of Anshe. And Shechem is Shechem. Anshe Shechem. The Anshe Shechem is they killed. So Bertzonam, they wanted to get Shechem the Kabor. But Ba'apam, they killed Anshe Shechem. They were able to destroy the people of Shechem. So he's giving like an excuse for them. Alright, how much time do we have? Not so much. Okay, we have a little bit. We know Yud is blessed to be the king. We know that, right? Yud has a blessing to be the king. What's up with Shaul? The first king was from Binyamin. But I don't get it. If Yehuda is supposed to be the king and everybody agrees with it, straight out he's told Yehuda, "Ata yaducha achicha." It says straight out, "Yishtach v'lecha b'neim avicha." Everybody's going to bow down to you. Gur Aryeh Yehuda, lo yasur shevet mi Yehuda. The rod will never leave Yehuda. You're going to be mechokig mi bein raga al kiyovo shilo. I don't get it. Yehuda is supposed to be the leader. He's supposed to be the king, and everybody agrees that there's no pshat out there that says Binyamin's supposed to be the king. No pshat out there that says Binyamin's the real king and not Yehuda. So why was Shaul made king first? Why was Shaul made king first? So Ramban has an awesome answer. He says, you know why Binyamin was made first? Because Binyamin was only put up there when they asked for it incorrectly. What did they say? They said, we want to make a king during the times of Shmuel and Avi, like the other nations, to be exactly like them. You know what I said? We want to be like them. We want to be like them. And we want to do it for them to judge us, to do this, do that. They said it in the wrong way. Because they said it in the wrong way, Akash Baruch Hu said, I don't want to give them David HaMelech because of that. Yehuda is not ready for that. I'm going to give them somebody else to show them that they did something wrong. If this guy is successful, then they'll be able to continue as being a quasi-king. A quasi-king. He'll be in charge of maybe his shevets. He'll be in charge of being the guy around. But Yehuda is still going to be on top of him. When they're ready, Yehuda is going to be on top. But that's only if they're successful. If they're not successful, he's going to go down. That was Shaul. Shaul was a king for a little bit. And he knew his time was limited. He always knew that Yehuda was supposed to have the real kingship. He knew that something was going to happen. But he always thought he was going to be the guy underneath. But when Shmuel and Avi tore away the kingdom from him, tore away the kingdom, if anybody knows the, because he tore away from Shmuel and Avi, when Yehuda, when Binyamin was torn away the kingdom from him, he no longer got the kingdom, that's when he said, oh no, I'm taking it all for myself. So that's when that happened. But I don't get it. If Lo Yasur Shevet Yehuda, once Yehuda comes out there, Lo Yasur, it'll never be removed from Yehuda, then how could Hashem tell Achia Shiloni to go make Yisrael a king? To go make kings from Yisrael, to make Yeravam ben Nevat a king of Yisrael? It was a nevuah. They had a prophecy to make another guy a king. But I thought Yehuda is supposed to be the king. Yehuda is supposed to be the guy in charge. Why in the world did they make this guy a king instead? What happened over there? What happened with that guy? Why was this guy made king instead? So there already we have an unbelievable answer. Yeravam ben Nevat is a machlokas Rambam and Ravid. The Rambam says there was no chance for any of Yeravam's children to become kings. The chance was either Yeravam is going to take over forever and that's it, and anybody else who becomes king is not going to be able to become king, or the Ravid says Yeravam ben Nevat is going to be the new Shaul. He'll be the new guy who will be under Malchus Yehuda. The guys who will be under Malchus Yehuda. But they'd have to admit, they'd have to agree to being under Malchus Yehuda. That's what Yeravam was going to be. His kids could become kings, but not really kings. They'd be sort of like Sarim. They'd be like the governor. They'd be like the vice president. That's what they were going to be. And Yehuda was going to be the ultimate. Yehuda was always going to be the ultimate. But Yeravam ben Nevat decided not to do that. Says the Ramban, heals like the Ramban, that every king that set themselves up for Malchus Yisrael were all Chayav of Misa, because they were married by Malchus Yehuda. Because the only king who was supposed to be there was Yeravam ben Nevat. Nobody else was allowed to become king. There was not a single other Nebuah. There's even a Medrash that says straight out, the Malchus came from them, not from me. Yeravam ben Nevat, I made king, but not them. I never said Yeravam's kids could become king. I never said that they could continue the kingship. I never said that Malchus Yisrael could really exist after Yeravam ben Nevat. I made it for Yeravam, and that's it. Nobody else is allowed to take it. But they did it anyway. So therefore, I'm going to kill them off. And Nachashmonayim and the second Beis HaMikdash, because they rebelled against their masters, against Yehuda, and they didn't let their masters become king. Mida Kinegamida, anybody know what happened to Nachashmonayim at the end of their lives? They got taken over by their own slaves. Their own slaves rebelled against them. Hordas, we know in the beginning of Basra, Gimel and Beis, Dalai and Aleph, Hordas rebelled against his masters. Mida Kinegamida, you rebel against your masters, Yehuda, we're going to have somebody rebel against you. Mida Kinegamida, so that you understand, you guys are going to go down just as well. That was the idea behind it. You should know, by the way, Yehuda's kingship is not like anybody else's. There's one letter missing from the entire bracha of Yehuda. One letter. You know what that letter is? A Zion. Why a Zion? A Zion stands for a crown. Zer. That's what Zer is, a crown. And also on top of a Zion, anybody know what's on top? Three little lines. It looks like a crown. If you look at a Zion in the Torah, it's got three little crowns on top and three little lines that come up from the top. It looks like a crown. Because the crown and the kingship of Yehuda is not totally on anything else. It's not totally on anything else. It's totally only on Yehuda being a good person. It'll always exist. And even if they become bad, lo yasser shevet miYehuda. It's never going to be removed. And also, Zion in Hebrew means what? Clay Zion, weapons. Yeah. Never depend yourself, says the Rabbeinu Bechaya, never depend yourself on weapons. God is always going to be with you. And that's Yehuda. What's Yehuda's name? Yehuda's name has Yud Hey, Vav Hey inside there. The Dalit, because he's got the strength of the sun, which is the fourth Galgil, which is the fourth one of the Kochavim that are out there in the sky. He's got the fourth, he's got tremendous power inside there. He's got a Kadosh Baruch Hu working with him. When Yehuda knows that God is doing everything for him and it's not him himself, you don't need weapons to go fight. When he realizes that, that's when Yehuda will be up there and he doesn't need anything else. Yeah.
Zion's also Shabbos, which is the thing where it's not
very good.
Physical.
That Mashiach could be there. And one last thing over here, the Bracha of Yehuda, it says, Velo Yikas Amim. Velo Yikas Amim. I'm sorry if you guys don't have a chumash, but you got to look this up later. Velo Yikas Amim. Says, Rabbi Shechter told me this last year, I think it was from Rav Shur, there was a chance that Moshe Rabbeinu could have been the Mashiach. How do we know that? Ad ki yavo Shiloh. Until Shiloh comes. Who's Shiloh? Shiloh refers to Mashiach. Why? Say all these words. Yavo Shiloh is Zem Mashiach. They give all these different gematrias. Yeah, it's this and whatever. But Shiloh is a gematria of Moshe. Why? Because Mashiach could have been Moshe. Could have been Moshe. Except for one thing. They needed to stay in Mitzrayim for 400 years. Had they stayed in Mitzrayim for 400 years, and then Moshe took them out, then he would have been the Mashiach, and eventually Yehuda would have gone over Moshe. He would have been the king, and Moshe would have been the teacher, but Moshe would have been the real Mashiach. That would have been Shiloh, would have been literally Moshe. The gematria of Moshe is Shiloh. That's what happened. Velo Yikas Amim. Lo, Lamed Vav, Yikas is, take that Yud, put it with the low. What do you make? Levi. Levi.
Kahas.
The next name is Kahas. And who's the son of Levi and Kahas?
Amram.
Amram. But the next word is Amim. Resh minus Yud is how many? 200 minus 10 is?
190. That's
you're missing 190 years out of the 400. Oh. Had you had that 400 years, then everything would have been okay. But because you're missing out on that 190, the Lo Yikas Amim is not going to happen. Moshe Rabbeinu is not going to be the Shiloh. Instead, it's going to be Mashiach. It's going to be a Mashiach later on from Mashiach ben Yehuda. But otherwise, it could have been from Moshe Rabbeinu himself. All right, we got one last board that we're ready for over here. One last board. I don't know if I'm going to be able to say this whole thing. It's a bit Kabbalistic, so you're going to have to bear with me. We know there's a Gemara in Tainus on Dalet Amud Beis that says, Yaakov Avinu lo meis. Yaakov Avinu never died. Yaakov Avinu never died. So what does that mean, Yaakov Avinu never died? I have a whole board within the mummies. He was mummified and everything. There's a board that goes with all that, but that's not what we're going to say right now. The Rabbeinu Bechaya says, it says, Vayigva Vayasof Vayaseif Alamov. He expired and he was gathered to his people. It does not say the word Vayamos. It does not say the word Vayamos by Yaakov Avinu. Problem is, Yaakov Avinu said it about himself. He said, I know I'm going to die. And the brothers said to Yosef, now that our father is dead. They used the word of Misa. Pshat is, maybe they didn't even know this. But there's no such thing as Misa by Yaakov Avinu. What does that mean? It's unbelievable. Normally, by a human being, a regular human being, including Goyim, the Ruach, the spirit of a person, remains above the body even after death. Says the Yalkut Ruveni, that's why, I've never heard this before either, if you make dice out of the bones of a dead guy, and you gamble with those dice, you're guaranteed to win. Guaranteed to win. I'm not making any suggestions. But because the ruach of the dead guy stands above the body, when you make these dice out of those bones, you'll be able to be very successful because the ruach will be with you. The ruach, the spirit, is going to be with you at all times. That's what he says. Now that's the ruach. Typically, the neshama, the higher up soul of a person, goes straight up to Shemayim, and does not stay with the goof. It does not come back down with the goof. It goes straight up to Shemayim and stays up in Shemayim. Normally, when it's up in Shemayim, it's so spiritual, there's no reason for it to come down here. However, if it's got a shlichus, if God wants to send it on a mission, like by Navos, if anybody knows Navi well, by Navos HaYisraeli, they can be sent down in a levush, in a type of levush hadak, they call them. A levush hadak. It's not exactly like a person's levush. It's more like what you would call a ghost levush. It's sort of see-through, but it's called levush hadak, something that's thinner. It does not have to be the clothes of the tachrichin of the dead person. It could be in any clothes that he wants, but he appears in that. Some people have that levush hadak, and it never comes away from them. They keep that levush hadak at all times. It remains with them at all times, says the Ramban. It stays with them at all times, that they always look physical in front of people, even though it's the neshama, which is spiritual. Because they keep this tiny levush hadak, which is a bit physical, on them at all times. But in order for that to happen, you have to be at an extremely high level. Rabbi Yehuda Anasi, when he came back to make kiddush for his children, was wearing this levush hadak. He was able to wear it. But when people started to hear about it, he didn't want to embarrass other people who weren't able to have that levush hadak, so he stopped doing it. He wouldn't come back because he didn't want to embarrass people whatsoever. Yaakov Avinu also. Yaakov Avinu Lomeis. He never died. He always had that levush hadak and stayed down in Olam Hazeh. What that means is he stayed in Olam Hazeh in that levush hadak, and whenever he needed to appear, he appeared. And that's what it means that he was still chayiv a little bit in mitzvos, because he had this bit of a levush. He wasn't totally physical like you or me, but he was somewhat physical. Enough physical to be able to do things. In this world. That's what it means that Yaakov is margish things that the other Ravos don't feel. That's what it means by Yari Yisrael, as the Yara Gedol Asher Asa Hashem b'Mitzrayim. Yisrael saw the great hand that was done in Mitzrayim. Yisrael is Yaakov Avinu. Yaakov Avinu himself saw the great hand that was done in Mitzrayim because he was there. He was there. He never really showed himself, but he was there. He was there. And that also explains Yogel Yaakov Yismach Yisrael. Your Levush Adak is what feels, has the hargushas of happiness and sadness and things like that. Yogel Yaakov. Yaakov will rejoice. Yismach Yisrael. Yisrael will be happy. That happens by Yaakov. That's the Levush Adak that Yaakov has that not too many other people have. And that's the pshat. Other neshamas go back to their shoresh and they deal with whatever they need to deal with in Olam Haba, whatever is up there for them. Whatever needs to be done for them. Yaakov never needed that. He knew exactly what was happening and he just sits and waits for Tchias HaMesim to happen, where he gets rejoined with his full body, gets the full reward that's waiting for such a tremendous great person, for such a tzaddik, and never needs to appear in the world unless he feels it's necessary. By the way, that Levush Adak may explain the face of Yaakov. And I know we gave another explanation with the Kisei HaKavod a couple weeks ago, but it may explain that why Yaakov, Yosef HaTzaddik, was able to see the face of Yaakov Avinu in Mitzrayim. That's the Levush Adak that appears. It's not a fully physical thing, but it's somewhat of a physical thing that can separate from the rest of the body. It's the neshama with a tiny little bit of a Levush that comes with it. That's the idea behind it. Now, obviously, there's a lot more to this, and I'm not going to pretend that I really know what I'm talking about. I'm honest. I'm not going to pretend like I know what I'm talking about. I'm reading you out to what the Ramban and the Ravina Bachaya say, and I will be the first one to tell you that if I said that I knew what was going on over here, I'm a liar. I'm an absolute liar. However, I get a little bit. I get a tiny little bit, and that's what I think I gave over. But the Ramban and the Ravina Bachaya themselves, the Ramban is a two-liner. The Ravina Bachaya is a little bit longer. And the notes that Chevelle brings in ones in the Ramban, and what the notes of the Ravina Bachaya of the Moser of Kook one, are unbelievable. But there's a lot more to it than what I just said that I really just don't understand. But that's the beginning of it. That's the Haskala. You can finish it off on your own, but that's the Haskala between Yaakov before Yaakov Avinu Lomeis. It's not the Peshatim behind it, but that's the Derek that we're going to go in this year. All right, guys, have a great Shabbos. Stop with that.